It's time for Power Hour.
I love your energy that you bring every day.
The IrishSportsDaily.com podcast covering the Fighting Irish throughout the year.
You know why I love it? Because you love football.
Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription.
This is a football family.
And now, your Power Hour host.
The guy has a lot of ability.
Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. We've got quite a show lined up for today. We had big recruiting weekend for Notre Dame, so we're going to bring on Christian McCollum to talk a little Irish recruiting. They had a bunch of sophomores in. We also had some juniors in as well, some important players. So we're going to talk to him, get a little update on what went down this weekend, how Notre Dame fared with some of these guys. And then we'll bring in Jamie and, of course, Matt Freeman, who is very excited today because his Gonzaga Zags get to play the national championship game. He could barely sit still here, Christian.
It's a big day.
I can imagine. He's going to be disappointed, I'm afraid.
Yeah, exactly. So Christian is watching his beautiful daughter, Kennedy. And so we may get some quotes from Kennedy out of this as well, which will be nice. And she may have even better quotes than Christian, don't you think?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we're going to do that. But first, I wanted to mention once again, if you get a chance, please do us a favor and share the show if you would. We were trying to expand our listenership. So if you would, please take the time to share the show on Facebook. You can share it on Twitter. If you go to the front page and you see the story that has Power Hour, there's a little button there you can push to share it. Or you can just take the link at the bottom and send it to your buddies. You send it to your friends, your Notre Dame family, whoever, and send that link. And we'd greatly appreciate that. So also, if you want to advertise for the site, you can reach out to me at MikeFrank18 at sbcglobal.net. Once again, MikeFrank18 at sbcglobal.net. Also, want to mention once again, still running our special $19.99 for access to Irish Sports Daily from now until August 1st. Lots going on with recruiting. We still got half of spring practice. May evaluations where we'll get a lot more offers and stuff happening then. And then, of course, football camp. And that'll be exciting. We got Irish Invasion. A lot of good stuff coming up for Notre Dame football and recruiting. Speaking of recruiting, Chris, this was a big weekend for Notre Dame. Anybody who's listened to this show for a long time knows that I've been not real happy with trying to get out and get involved with these kids so early. It's so important to get involved and get on these kids early. Having a sophomore day, I think, was a genius idea between guys like Mike Elston and Dave Poloquin and Adam Carney, just all three of those guys coming up with this idea of having an actual sophomore day, first time it's ever happened. And most important, Christian, they brought in a lot of guys that were offered yesterday or had been offered. So these are some of the very top guys that they're looking at. And it sounds like they had, 14 or so that came in this weekend?
Yeah, about that. And like you said, I mean, getting this event started up, it really shows that they're thinking forward. But it's not something they just put together just so they could say they had a sophomore day. I mean, like you said, they had some of their top targets. Not all these kids have offered and from Notre Dame yet, and some of them, we thought could get offered this weekend. Not all of them did, but these are kids that are not just throw-in kids. These aren't kids that are visiting just because their coaches at a program or something like that. These are legit guys who have very good chances at, receiving Notre Dame offers before their time is up, and guys that Notre Dame has a really good shot at, landing eventually. This is way down the road, but, the recruiting game gets more and more accelerated each year. And for them to, really start this process now with these kids is definitely a good sign.
The interesting thing, too, is it wasn't just a bunch of guys from Ohio and Indiana and Illinois and Michigan. They brought some guys in all the way from Florida. They brought some guys from down south. I mean, they did a really good job of getting guys to come from distance as well, some of these top guys. There were some important guys for 218 that came in. Tight end George Takacs, wide receiver Chase Williams, defensive end Thomas Booker, and DB Michael McDowell. Those are some 218 kids that were in this past weekend. Where do you think we're standing with some of these guys right now?
Well, I think, you know, George, he's a tight end from Florida, but he's originally from Indiana. His mom went to Notre Dame. He grew up a big Notre Dame fan, has already been to campus multiple times beforehand. He's got a top four, I think it's Florida, Georgia, Wisconsin, and Notre Dame. And I think I think pretty much everyone probably agrees that Notre Dame's the favorite at this point for him. It'll be interesting to see if he tries to make a decision relatively soon, or if he plays it out a little bit. I know his plan is to definitely have one done before the start of his senior season. So I think it'd be a good sign for Notre Dame the sooner he chooses. As far as Thomas Booker goes, he's another guy that's just super, super Notre Dame type of kid. You know, I mean, it's not hard to see that. You can talk to him one time and know it. As soon as we learned more about him, I think it was pretty obvious to us that we thought it was going to be a Notre Dame-Stanford battle in the end. And after visiting this weekend, I think that that's kind of been reaffirmed so far. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it's definitely Notre Dame and Stanford right now. I think that those are probably the two teams that are going to be the toughest to beat. Obviously, there's some other teams that are trying to sniff around there. But I think for Booker, it's going to come down to that. And again, this is what Notre Dame's got to battle. And look, you can't beat Stanford in recruiting if you can't beat them on the field. So you got to make sure you're starting to take care of what happens on the field. As soon as Notre Dame starts beating Stanford on a consistent basis, they're going to start beating them again in recruiting. You know, that's really the issue more than anything. Stanford has a lot to offer. Everybody knows that. But they can't match Notre Dame when it comes to football. But you know what? If Notre Dame's 2-7 against Stanford, you know, that's not a good situation. So we got to hope that Notre Dame can rectify that problem that they had at the end of next year.
I think one positive there is Booker was on campus at Stanford last summer with Braden Lindsey, and those two really hit it off at Stanford. So I think Lindsey can kind of get in Booker's ear a little bit and tell him why he chose Notre Dame over Stanford. So I think that could play not a huge factor down the road, but it will play a factor just knowing that Booker has someone that he can go to get advice on both schools.
And then as far as Dowell goes, I mean, he didn't get offered. You're talking about the Ohio DB.
Yep.
He didn't get offered. I think, you know, Notre Dame probably still evaluating him. But, you know, with him, I think it's definitely a Michigan State to beat. You know, there's a team to beat there. He's got two brothers there now. And then as far as Chase Williams goes, I'm not sure that he's a guy that will pull the trigger anytime soon. But just the fact that he made the unofficial visit all the way out from California to see Notre Dame shows that the interest he's talked about when he got the offer was indeed legit.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a guy that obviously Notre Dame likes and brought up here and everything, but there's a lot of guys on that list as well. So, they don't need him to make a decision right away. I'm sure they'll be taking up to four wide receivers when it's all said and done. Now, 219 kids, there was a ton of guys that came in. A lot of guys had already been offered, you know, before. But there were some new offers, guys like defensive end George Carl Laftis. You guys got to help me with some of these names. And then
Carl Laftis, that's the way I say it.
Carl Laftis, and then Juwan Briggs and Jason, is it Bargy?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, those are some guys that were offered, and maybe even a couple more. Where do you think Notre Dame stands with some of these guys?
You talk about George Carl Laftis. He's the kid from West Lafayette. His father actually played football at Miami. Kid actually spent a lot of his time overseas and didn't move back over to the States until like eighth grade. So even though his father played football at Miami, his game's still kind of new to him. He has a handful of offers, and he has Indiana, Purdue, and SMU before Notre Dame. But Notre Dame really opened his eyes, and he's really excited about the offer. Talked to his coach, and you know, he said there's got a lot of people around him that like Notre Dame and that kind of stuff. The kid hasn't been shy about saying Miami is his dream school, and definitely because of the connection with his father. His father passed away a few years back, so there's definitely some significance there. But with Notre Dame getting in there, getting the offer out there, I think they've positioned themselves to remain in the race. Bargy's a kid who kind of is a little bit under the radar. I mean, it's hard to say that for a 2019 kid, but still, I mean, he only had one offer from Illinois coming into the weekend, and then his second offer comes from Notre Dame. He was really impressed. I mean, he came down with his coach. His coach told me he was really, really excited about the offer. The kid himself, you know, he really told me he just really was impressed with the family feel that he saw within the program, with the players and the coaches. And that's something that he really, really wanted to see. and something he would want to be a part of. He wants to come back in the fall for a game. And then another guy is Juwan Briggs. He's the defensive tackle from Cincinnati. In my opinion, he's very similar to Booker in terms of his maturity and his priorities. He's very, very serious about academics. But the thing that caught me was he kind of knew that the academics were going to be a positive at Notre Dame. So that didn't really, you know, surprise him much. But what he was really, really impressed with was the practice that he saw and the intensity of the practice. The fact there wasn't much walking around. His coach had told me in the past that not only is he the most talented kid they have, but he's the hardest practice player they have. So I think getting him a chance to see that was big for Notre Dame, and I think they're going to be in the running all the way till the end.
You know, just the fact that you got involved in some of these guys so early, I think is just huge. It's just very important. And the thing that people don't understand, it's hard for Notre Dame to offer a sophomore. And the reason why is they haven't even got their sophomore – you know, spring semester grades at this point. So it's very hard for Notre Dame to say, yeah, we can offer you a scholarship when they have no idea what they're going to do the spring semester. They have no idea what they're going to do their entire junior year or their senior year. So, I mean, it's one of those things that they have to be kind of careful in how they explain these offers, you know, and they're really conditional offers. You know, basically, look, if you can't, you know, cut it academically, you know, this offer isn't valid, but we like you as a player. We'd like to offer you as a player. So something I think that they should have been doing all along, and you just got to explain it well. And most important, you got to explain it well to the coach too, you know, the high school coach, and say, look, here's the deal. You know, you know how we are academically. And I think that they're really trying to take a forward step in that regard. So I'm very encouraged by that. I think that they really have approached a lot of things that they felt like they were lacking. And I think they've really done a great job of trying to address those and get better, you know, move forward and make some advancements in these areas. So I'm excited about that. You know, other than that, I mean, I think recruiting is going very well. You know, I think that they've done a really good job in landing some of these guys. Ovi Gufu just had a great opening this past weekend, was named the MVP linebacker at the opening there in Chicago. I thought that was impressive. And I think the kid's going to be a pretty good player. I think he's a little raw, but he's got a lot of athletic ability, and I think he's going to surprise. And I think that's what you're going to find with a lot of these guys. You know, Matt, we didn't know what to expect with Aaron Banks and Robert Hainsey, and boy, they've been impressive. You know, they've been better than I thought that they would be at this point. So maybe, you know, some of the talent on this recruiting class and some of these guys are a little bit better than maybe we thought.
Yeah, I mean, especially once you get Ovi in a college weight program.
Yeah.
Now Notre Dame can say that.
Yeah.
I mean, Bayless can totally transform that kid. I mean, once he gets 30 pounds on him.
Yeah.
I mean, that kid could be a freak show. So you got to like where they're at there with Ovi. But then their two defensive back commits also got invites to the opening in Kalon Gervin and Derek Allen. So that bodes well just seeing that Notre Dame is getting elite talent across the country. So, I mean, that's a heck of a start, what, 2 months into the recruiting cycle, essentially. So, I mean, I think Notre Dame couldn't be more happy at this point.
Yeah, they're doing a great job. Go ahead.
The other thing that this good start to 2018 done is it's kind of changed the narrative in terms of, you know, these 2018 kids, if you're talking to them, they're thinking about Notre Dame from a recruiting standpoint. They're thinking more about those guys and guys like Phil Jurkovic, Marquis Stepp. They're not thinking about the fact that Notre Dame was 4-8 last year. So that's what that momentum and that buzz can do. They need to try to find a way to maintain that, you know, through the next couple months and then produce on the field, obviously, in the fall. But I didn't think there was going to be any way they were going to be able to get 4-8 off the table, as, you know, or at least not the main topic this quickly.
Yeah, they've done a fantastic job by getting a lot of guys committed. So very excited about what's going on with Notre Dame recruiting. Hopefully they can continue. And the big thing is you got to land some bigger names towards the end. But I think they've done a really good job, and they seem to be staying on top of things with recruiting. So, all right, Chris. Well, hey, we wanted to say thanks for the update, and look forward to reading all your stuff coming up here in the coming weeks. And we'll see you at the spring game.
All right, go Heels.
All right.
You're an idiot.
See you guys.
All right. All right, folks, we're back here. We brought in Jamie Uyama, and now we've got Matt And I thought we would just talk a little bit about spring practice. We have some questions from ISD customers we want to get to as well. But, you know, we're about halfway through. We've seen a number of practices already. You know, got to see a couple full practices plus six periods of a couple others. I mean, what do you think we know right now, Matt? What do you think we know about this team?
I think this team is forming its identity, and I think that starts with Brandon Wimbush. I think we know Brandon Wimbush is going to be able to handle what's coming at him. Obviously, he's going to see a lot of stuff, but we know he's not going to get overwhelmed. We know Notre Dame's probably going to run the football a whole hell of a lot more this year. And then, obviously, they're going to be more physical. I mean, that's kind of what we're taking away from the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, we just haven't seen much, as even the coaches have stated. They're not working so much on scheme. They're working on fine-tuning the techniques and catching those guys back up from where they kind of fell off last year. So I know that's probably not what Notre Dame fans want to hear in terms of scheme, but you got to start somewhere, and they're starting from the ground up, which I think is very, very important.
Yeah, I agree. Jamie, any thoughts from you? Anything we know at this point?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the defense, there's still going to be unknowns, and I imagine we probably won't know a lot till fall camp, because I think they're still trying to find out who the players are going to be, you know, like which guys they know they can count on. And I think they have a good idea of, you know, certain guys they know. You know, Niles Morgan obviously is going to be a guy. But I think that's one of the reasons why they haven't really kind of spoken up and given more insight on some individuals. You know, they like what they have in Julian Love and Niles Morgan. And, you know, you heard Kelly say some nice things about Nick Coleman and stuff. And I think that's good. But, you know, they're still trying to find out who are the guys that they can count on and then kind of build up from there. And I totally agree with Matt, you know, saying that, you know, they're kind of finding their identity on offense. And I think, you know, that identity is going to be through running the football and, you know, and as having like Brandon Wimbush as the leader. And I think, you know, in another sense, if things went a little bit different last year, I thought maybe they would have stuck with that kind of identity throughout. But I think when they saw that first game from DeShone Kizer and kind of felt that he was, you know, obviously he had a special game that first game, they kind of thought that was the identity and got away from kind of maybe what it should have been. So hopefully they stick with running the football, you know, building behind this offensive line, which I think can be pretty good, and the, you know, the three backs that we obviously have said pretty, you know, we've given high praise to all three of them.
To me, I mean, I think you guys have kind of hit on really everything as far as what we know. I hope that you're right, Matt, that they will run the ball. I think that the intent certainly appears to be that that's what they're going to do. I just want to make sure that that's what they do, you know. It'll be interesting to see when push comes to shove and games get close, you know, who's pulling the levers there. Is it really Chip Long? Is it Brian Kelly? I got to give Kelly, you know, the benefit of the doubt, because if you look at what's happened in the fall or in the spring so far, you know, Brian Kelly's really doesn't seem to be that involved on the offensive side. You know, when we actually watch him in team and stuff, he's not necessarily coaching the quarterbacks as hard as he was. He's not necessarily yelling about this or that. He's more kind of sitting back and just observing versus being more hands-on. So I gotta believe that Chip Long is running the show, and I think that that's a good thing. And Jamie, your point of you know, not having a Kizer at this point, and I think that forces you to do things differently, because you don't know how Brandon Wimbush is going to, you know, react when it comes to pressure and you know, key points of the game. You can't, I guess you don't have a whole lot of faith at this point, just because you haven't seen it live, that he can put the team on his back with his arm and carry him into the end zone. We don't know that. So I think just having that balance will really help this offense. The most important thing is what will Brian Kelly learn from this experience? That's going to be the most important thing. You know, if all of a sudden you're starting to have success running the football and you know, fundamentals and being physical and things like that. Do you learn that lesson, that this needs to be the situation for every practice, or do you fall back into some bad habits? And that's really the issue. But hey, let's get it fixed first, and then we'll have to worry about that. So, is there anything so far that's kind of surprised you about what we've learned? I mean, to me, I think we kind of hit on some things last week about, you know, Nick Coleman jumping out so much early. And what does that say about Jalen Elliott and Devin Studstill? You know, what does that say about them? I liked hearing Brian Kelly talk about Miles Boykin, you know, because I've mentioned a couple times in my practice report, I've been very surprised by how well Miles Boykin has done. And to hear Kelly come up and really kind of, you know, I guess back that up or justify that, I think says that, you know, hey, he must be having, because Jamie's right. They really haven't said a lot about any players, and I think that's by design. I don't think that they want to give anybody praise or put any undue expectations on anybody at this point, because they simply don't know what they have, and I think that's smart. Matt, you have any thoughts?
What's kind of surprised me is just the ups and downs that the receivers have had. I kind of, like you talked about Boykin coming on, he's had a good spring by all means, and as well as Chris Fink, but some of the other guys have just kind of been up and down. Like EQ's been up and down. CJ Sanders, Javon McKinley. I mean, Chase Claypool's made a couple plays here and there, but I mean, he had a ball bounce off his face mask in the red zone, and I mean, that obviously can't happen because we saw that happen against USF a couple years ago, and that purple face Kelly comes out. So
yeah.
But I mean, I'm just kind of surprised that they've kind of looked so up and down. I know it's still early, and there's still a lot of young guys out there, but I was hoping that they'd kind of take that next big step forward, but they haven't quite done that yet. But there's still plenty of time to get everybody on the same page, especially with a new quarterback. But that's kind of one surprise, I guess, that's kind of stuck out to me.
I agree with that. You know, what I was hoping to see is EQ be a true number one, like we'd see with Fuller, you know, in practice. Yeah. I don't see that yet out of EQ. And I was hoping to see a number two emerge. If people were remember, those were kind of the things I was hoping to see from wide receiver. And I just I haven't seen it. And I, you know, we don't know what's going on with Kevin Stepherson. You know, he could be a solid number two for sure. But right now, I'd say Miles Boykin looks as good as anybody right now. I really would. And if that's the case, and I'm not saying Miles Boykin looks great. You know, I think he's playing with more confidence and making more plays, but I wouldn't say he looks like a number one either. So that's kind of one of the things.
And I'm not saying the wide receiver group has looked horrible either.
No.
I think they're going to be more than fine next fall, but they've just kind of haven't gotten to that best receiver or top five receiver group in the country. And that's kind of where they need to get talking about, I guess.
Yeah. I don't see that happening with this group. I don't see them being that good. But I would like to see, you know, we should be able to say this is the number one guy and this is the number two guy. And then after that, you've got a bunch of guys. But I think if you're having things develop properly, that's what you should see. Again, it's early in spring, so there's plenty of time to develop that relationship, quarterback, wide receiver relationship, and for guys to get better. So it's certainly nothing to get panicked about at this point, but I agree with you. We haven't seen that. Jamie, anything really disappoint you so far?
I guess the I mean, it's not surprising that it's like this, but I was hoping that the defensive line there'd be a little bit more people stepping up there, and I just haven't seen it enough yet. You know, you want to kind of see, you know, you're kind of hoping Jerry Tillery would take that next step. And you just haven't really seen it from him yet, you know, and maybe it's because he's kind of slid back into one technique and has been playing there a little bit more. But you just haven't seen that enough from the interior guys, you know, if there's going to be an impact guy there. And at the big end, too, I don't think we've kind of seen anything there to make us feel really good about what's happening there either. I think Dalen Hayes has been probably the biggest positive there. But other than that, I mean, you just don't see anyone emerging there that makes you feel confident that the defensive line is going to be a strong unit later on. I mean, it's early right now, and, you know, we'll see where they are at the end of spring. But just, yeah, I guess that would be a disappointment for me.
Or the offensive line could be that good, Jamie.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, the offensive line certainly deserves credit, but I mean, you would like to think that
they're making the defensive some line,
well, yeah, would win some battles.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And you're not seeing that. You're not seeing anyone make a play. Like,
we did
make a play.
You know, in their defense, I thought when we watched the goal line stuff, they did a nice job. You know, when they were playing inside the red zone, those drills that we saw. But let's be honest, they knew they were all running drills, you know, because that's all they did was run. So they knew that they were focused on the run at that point. They didn't have to worry about the pass, and that therefore it was easier for them to defend the run. But they did do a good job and win some individual battles. And so I think that is important to point out. But I agree with you, Jamie. You know, it just you would hope that Brian Kelly would be saying something positive about somebody in that group right now. And there just isn't, you know. And the thing that stands out to me more than anything, Jamie, is I still can't point to a guy that says, boy, that guy works really hard. You know, I just can't. I can't point to a guy that says that guy is playing like he wants to be a champion. I just can't. And that's a problem that I don't know if you can fix it. I don't know. You know, I think John Bonner wants to be a good player. He plays with a lot of effort. And so I like that about him, but I think he's undersized a little bit, you know. And after that, I can't look at a guy and say that guy plays with his hair on fire. Just don't see it. And I don't think that's necessarily a slight on the coaching there. I just think that some of the players they recruited there, that's kind of their demeanor, and you know, it's part of the job of the coach to, you know, kick it into high gear, but at the same time, the players got to step up and want to be good as well. And, you know, maybe this is a learning example of, gosh, when we're out there recruiting, we better make sure we're getting the right mentality. You know, because most defensive linemen are just fat, slow, and lazy anyway, aren't they, Matt?
No comment.
Especially the ones from Canada.
How dare you guys?
Especially the ones from Canada. All right. Oh boy, I had to get my shot in.
I knew it was coming. This is all leading up to something.
I've been too nice to you this whole time. So. Oh boy, can't wait to see you again, Jamie. I sure enjoy you. One thing that I think that I really liked hearing though, and Brian Kelly, and maybe this is part of the excuse, is, you know, when we were talking to him at the last press conference, he said, look, you know, you come and you watch a Mike Elko practice, it's going to be pretty boring because it's going to be all fundamentals. We're going to work so much on fundamentals, 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 that it's not exciting to watch because it really isn't when you're doing that. And we know that because we've watched it. Yeah. But I think that's huge. I really do. And I think that's what has been lacking. I think the things that have been lacking on this defense are – one, certainly fundamentals. Two, I don't think they have as many playmakers as they'd like. But three, I think also intensity has been lacking on this. You got to fix those three things, but I think it starts with fundamentals. If you can be a sound defense and do the smart thing fundamentally, I think that's going to be huge. And so I guess I want to temper everybody's disappointment, or I don't want them to read too much into our comments that, hey, you know, they're not standing out. I think maybe part of it is because they're focusing so much on this that it's hard to, when you get into team and scheme and things, to kind of go 100% because you're thinking so much about your fundamentals that, you know, maybe that's an excuse on that. What do you think, Matt?
No, I agree. I mean, Mike Elko built Wake Forest into a good defensive program for the most part. And I mean, you just got to trust his methods. I mean, like you talked about, it's not exactly the most thrilling practice to watch, and it's definitely a struggle to write a practice report on it just because they're doing so many different tackling drills, and you can only explain those in so many ways. So,
sure.
But I think that's where it starts, because, I mean, last year they just missed way too many tackles. And, I mean, that's the constant complaint on the boards is just Drew Tranquil missed his tackles. That still took a wrong angle. So, I mean, if he can master that with his guys, I mean, that's step one. And then you can start putting your guys in position to make those plays once they're able to make them. So,
Jamie, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I just think, yeah, like Matt was saying, that the biggest complaints from the defense of the last few years has been how poor they do the little things, right? Like tackling, like getting off blocks. And you can't scheme your way out of that. I don't care how great the scheme is or how much you can confuse somebody. There's only so much you can do. You know, when it comes down to football, majority of the game is blocking and tackling. And if you don't block well on offense, you're not going to be able to do much on offense. And if you can't tackle well on defense, then, you know, you're pretty much useless on defense. So I think, you know, I'm encouraged that this is the approach they've been that they've taken. And I think it's the right thing to do based on the roster they have. And maybe, you know, maybe next spring, if they kind of feel everyone's at a certain level, they don't have to work on it quite as much. But I mean, when you consider where they were, I think they do have to work on it and emphasize it and make sure it's a priority. And I think it's for the best for not only the long run, but also for what they want to be like right away at the beginning of the year, because they can't come into the season and not tackle well. Right. Like they did against Texas. Right. It's got to have that mentality from day one.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Van Gorder's scheme, I'll give him props a little bit. I mean, he had guys in the right spot in multiple occasions throughout last year when he was the D coordinator in the previous years, but his guys just didn't know how to tackle.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no scheme.
I would say that
putting them in the right place.
I would say the secondary, they weren't in the right spot a lot.
No.
But the rest of the team.
But some of those the run blitzes and stuff,
oh, sure.
He had guys in the right spot.
Yeah, they just flat missed.
Tackle.
Yeah, flat missed. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, just watching, say, the linebackers, Clark Lee will spend an entire period on just proper steps. I mean, literally, they'll just sit there and just focus on proper steps and how to approach a tackle. Not even the, you know, the process of what you do with your arms and how you use your hips. It's just the proper steps and how to engage a block and you know, not even how to defeat a block once you get, you know, into an offensive lineman, how to approach that just before. It's
the most boring thing to watch.
It is very boring to watch, but it's going to pay off. And, you know, flip that to tight ends. You know, I've been watching Chip Long a lot with tight ends and his coaching. That guy spends a tremendous amount of time on moving their tight ends, how they move, the proper footwork and steps on exactly how to move, and then the proper technique to come up and approach a block. And I bet the first six periods he probably spends four of those periods just on the various different types of movements that their tight ends will make, and then the proper approach to going to set up a block. And gosh, I don't even remember, you know, I don't want to criticize, but we just didn't see a lot of that previously. And I think that there's a reason why, you know, they didn't block well as tight ends and they didn't move well when they did. So I just think that overall those fundamentals and that focus, while it's not very sexy, it's not very fun to watch, and it's certainly not fun to report on, and I'm sure it's frustrating for some of our readers going, God, there's got to be something more exciting than this. I think it's going to pay off. I really do think it'll pay off come fall, and they'll be a better team. They'll be a better fundamental team. And, you know, in the end, that's kind of where we're at with this when it comes to this defense. You know, it is what it is. It's not going to be sexy. It's not going to have a dominating Jalen Smith type of player. There's just nobody out there on that roster that I could say that guy's got that kind of potential. But I think if they can just get their fundamentals down, tackle better, you know, instead of a 4-yard gain, you get a 2-yard loss. You know, instead of a 7-yard game, it's only a 2-yard gain because you tackled well at the line of scrimmage. Those are the kind of things that get offenses off program, off of schedule, and off the field. And so I think that's really it. You know, if the defense can hold teams to 20 points, you know, in the 20s, they got a chance to win a lot of football games.
Yeah, I mean, we talked to Niles Morgan last week, and he said that Elko is teaching them the difference between 3rd and 4 and 3rd and 7 and where to be on the field. And he said that he hadn't really gotten that before, and I think that'll make a big difference, just awareness of the situation more than scheme per se. And then, like you were talking about, what was your last comment?
Well, no, I was just talking about if they can keep them in the 20s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think everybody wants this dominating defense of holding teams to 10 points. But, I mean, if you look at Alabama, they get into shootouts all the time. It's
sure.
about forcing turnovers.
Yeah.
And that's the other emphasis of this spring has been
turnovers.
Forcing turnovers. And I think that's where Notre Dame can make up the biggest ground, too. But like you said, I mean, if they hold teams under 20, they should win every single game.
Well, yeah, and it's under 20s, you know, maybe a stretch. But if they can keep them in the 20s, I think this has an offense – as an offense, this is a group that can score 30 on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
You know, I really think so because of the offensive line, the backs. You know, they have some dynamic receivers. They got some big guys that are good. I mean, look, man, if you could put EQ, Claypool, you know, and Alizé on the field along with a Stefferson, if he's ready to go, I mean, that's really difficult to defend. And then you put a quarterback with a kind of a explosion that Wimbush has, you know, that's really difficult to defend. So I think the idea is let's not, you know, go crazy and you know, just try and force the issue. Let's just be a better fundamental team. And if we can do that and limit some of the mental errors and bad fundamental mistakes, you know, we can hold teams into the 20s. Jamie, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's small margins between, you know, average to good. And I think that's why they're working on these things to try to, you know, like Matt was saying about the 3rd and 4 difference between 3rd and 4 and 3rd and 7. It's a small thing. It might be, you know, your like foot placement on a tackle, you know, the way you step into a tackle, you know, that causes a guy to go. He carries you 3 yards instead of you knocking him back. And it's those small things that make a difference in the end, because, you know, it's about getting off the field. It's about, you know, getting turnovers. It's about working on these specific things, on tipping, you know, deflecting a pass, that maybe is an easy completion for, you know, for 5 or 6 yards and knocking that down and making it 3rd and 10 instead of 3rd and 4. Right. And those are the things that are going to make the difference in the end.
Friday, we're going to have the opportunity to watch the full practice again, which I'm really looking forward to, because you really kind of get a better understanding of what the team looks like. One thing that stood out to me is the team has done it in what we've saw. They've done a really good job of protecting the football. I think there was one interception we saw. I don't think we've seen even a fumble yet in the practices we've seen. So it's going to be interesting to me to watch and see, one, does Wimbush continue to protect the football well? He seems to make good decisions and not take a lot of chances, which I is encouraging. He seems to play within the play and not try and become the play. And I think that's important. That's what you want in a first-year quarterback is, look, you'll have opportunities to make plays, but don't try and take over the game, all right? Just play within the play. And so I'm going to be interested to watch and see how he protects the football. You know, I assume we'll see some live action and how he looks in that. And how, you know, they protect the football on offense. But more importantly, they've been talking about defense and creating turnovers, and that's a focus. Well, I want to see that too. I mean, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You want to more than protecting the football, but I want to see the defense start to make some plays. And you know, they showed a couple clips from UND, you know, where guys were making plays on the ball and maybe a strip here and a pick there. But I really want to see that. And because it, you know, I don't want it all to be positive for the offense. I want to see some positive for the defense, and that's really what I'm going to try and focus on in, on Friday when we get a chance.
One thing that's really helping out Wimbush in that regard is they're almost every pass is off play action, whether it's like it's just a stupid fake, like a dip with the ball or whatever. That just gives him a split second more time, and I mean that helps a young quarterback.
Sure.
And that helps the receivers get a little bit more separation. So I think that's something that's been big for him. I mean, I honestly, outside of the 7-on-7 periods, I couldn't think of a play where they haven't done something off play action that was a pass. So
yeah,
I think that could be something to watch going forward.
They haven't let him run much, which is, and even though he's still wearing a red jersey, they haven't let him run much. So that would be interesting to see if they let him do some of that. But I'm excited to see what happens. You know, I'm gonna focus on the safeties a lot too. I want to see what's going on there. I had just written down here before, you know, in the last practice on Friday, Tranquil worked with the linebackers, and is that going to continue? Because if that continues, that makes me think that they're starting to feel more comfortable with what's going on with the safeties. You know, Nick Coleman's standing up, and you know maybe he's a guy. And so they're feeling a little bit more confident about what's going on there. So I think that's going to be a tell is what happens with Tranquil on Friday. If he's still out working with the linebackers, you know, maybe they're feeling a little bit better about that, and maybe we can too. So these are just a little signs of things that you look for when you're out there. And of course, defensive line, I'm very curious about that. You know, can anybody make some plays when that's happening? So that's what I'm looking for. We're going to move on. We got some questions from ISD customers and kind of get some thoughts on this. First question is, it appears we are hearing much more about Brian Kelly being involved in recruiting. What do you think is driving this? Is it a result of him becoming more of a CEO and now having more time to commit to recruiting instead of running the offense? Or is it just an improved emphasis from him? To me, I think everything I've heard, it's just him. You know, he's just taking more of an active role, which I think is important. And I think Brian Kelly probably towards the last end of the year had a lot of time to think about when things are going bad. You know, you start really looking at things and saying, man, what are we doing wrong here? And I think the last probably all of November and while he's out recruiting and trying to figure this out, I'm sure it was wearing on his mind. What are we doing wrong? And he's thinking about what are we doing wrong and probably talking to people, you know, his coaches, his support staff and all these people trying to figure out what he's doing wrong. And I think that what we've seen is him address that so far. And so to me, I think it's just, you know, he's more focused on it. Thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, I think he's a little bit more active per se, just getting kids on the phone and stuff. But I also think Notre Dame kind of wised up and realized that you can have somebody else run Coach Kelly's Twitter account.
Like, yeah.
You can have your interns or even a guy like Poloquin or Kearney just send messages to kids through direct message privately and stuff like that. And the kids don't know who's sending it to them, and they think it's Brian Kelly. So, I mean, there's no harm in that. So, I mean, it just is another avenue just to connect with the kids, and I think they've gotten smarter about the way they can use Kelly's social media presence and stuff like that. Not to take away that Kelly's is working harder at recruiting, but, I mean, it's just a couple little things that you work – what's the saying? You work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're implying at this point.
Well, I think the thing too is, these are the things that we've talked about on air and on the site. It's like, you know, people think that we're just kind of ragging on them about things, but when you have extra guys to do that, that takes away their responsibility of some of the coaches to do these types of things and lets them focus on what's important, like how to coach and how to get guys going.
I mean, you think Urban Meyer has time to sit there and text 80 kids?
No. Well, no, and no. I'm sure he's not, but he is picking up the phone and he is talking to people, and that's very important. And I think Brian Kelly's doing more of that than he ever has, which is good. And I thought he did a lot more of that last year up until the start of the season, and then it fell way off. And again, you know, you got to focus on what's your priority, which is winning games. But at the end of the day, it didn't matter how much you focused on. They weren't winning games. I guarantee you whatever Brian Kelly focused on didn't give them any more wins than if he didn't. You know, they were who they were. So you still have to take care of what you're doing. But that's where these extra support staff helps. And, Matt, we just saw, was it last week, they had a big thing where they were looking for more interns. You know, they basically, and the first time I really saw them kind of push it out there, trying to get more and more people out there. They did a, you know, a concerted effort to kind of push it out there and say, hey, we're looking for people. Come here and meet us and that type of thing. And so that was encouraging for me, I think, as well.
Yeah, I mean, even at practice on Friday, Kelly was talking to Thomas Booker and his dad for a solid 15 minutes before practice. I mean, it wasn't a quick, hey, how are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Well, I got to go practice. He made a big effort just to sit there and talk with them. And, I mean, just based off body language, they were having a good conversation.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think that's the little things that he's doing. Not that he wouldn't take that time before, but it's just evidence of him putting in the time.
We didn't see him do a lot of that before, you know. When we'd be at practice and there'd be a recruit, we wouldn't see him talking tremendous amount with those guys, and he's starting to do that a little bit more. That's huge. You know, that's just huge. It's very important. And, you know, I don't know if Brian Kelly is the type that wants to just sit and talk to people and shoot the breeze. I'm not sure that he's that kind of guy, but it's just something you got to do. You know, it's just that's just the way it is. Next question, Mike. I know it's been brought up on the board several times, but I wanted to know exactly what – you did know regarding Lou Holtz's resignation, firing. Was he really fired? Could he have come back in 97 if he really wanted to? Was he indeed burnt out? You know, again, I don't know the facts on this stuff. You know, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the room. I didn't hear the conversation. All I can tell you is what I was told. You know, people were just necessarily weren't very happy with him. And I think he was fed up too, you know. I think based off everything I heard, you know, recruiting, they started putting the screws to him about guys who could get in. And, you know, some of the things that had happened, they weren't happy with. And I don't think he was happy. And I think it was just time. You know, I don't know if they told him he was fired or he resigned or whatever the case may be. I don't think that they were happy with the situation. I don't think he was. And it was just time to move on. So next question, will Wimbush be under center in the goal line package? I think we have an O-line in the backs to punish the opposition in short yardage situations. Just would love to see him hand it off right away instead of having to read the D, you know, and set everything up in those situations. And to be honest with you, I think that that is key. It's not necessarily is he under center, but I think going fast is important in those types of things. And you want to be set up, but you don't want to give the defense time because the defense a lot of times is a reactionary situation, especially in those situations. They want to know, are you too tight end? Do you have an H-back? How are your receivers lined up? So those guys are looking at the defensive staff trying to figure out what play, what are we doing, what are we supposed to be in, that type of thing. If you can line up and just go straight under center and just snap and go fast, I think that that really helps you. Ohio State does a lot of that, and I think it's very effective for them. So the encouraging sign is we did see him under center now and again, and we just never saw that. So my guess is they wouldn't practice it unless they at least wanted to look at it to see if it's effective. And, you know, Jamie, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. You know, Chip Long's done this quite a bit, at least in the Memphis film that we saw.
Yeah, he did that. They would run with use a tight end as kind of like an H-back fullback as well, which I know will get a lot of Notre Dame fans excited. He did that quite a bit, and I think he'll do it more with Notre Dame than he even did with Memphis because. I think one of the things with Memphis is they didn't really have the hogs up front where they were going to bully people around. They, you know, kind of ran more out of necessity rather than running when they wanted to run the ball. And I think, you know, when they get around like the 2 yard line and they want to run the ball in, I think they know that he knows that Notre Dame has those guys to be able to do that kind of thing, unlike Memphis. So, I would expect them to go under center quite a bit more, maybe not all the time, but definitely run that a little bit more and run a little bit more heavy personnel in those goal line situations.
All right, next question. Given Stefferson's place on the depth chart, should we be prepared for the fact that he won't be playing in the fall? You know, I don't think anybody can answer that, you know, at this point. I think if he were suspended or whatever, he wouldn't be playing at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's practicing.
Yeah, I mean, he's practicing. I think that this is just basically a public spanking. You know what I mean? A public spanking and saying, look, you know, we're not putting up with this or that or whatever. And I'm not going to get into, you know, what I think is the issue here because it's a privacy issue. But whatever it is, I think this is just kind of a saying of, look, you know, this is not going to happen or continue anymore. If you want to be a part of this team, you're going to have to earn your way back up the depth chart. I will say in Wednesday's practice last week, it seemed like he was more, when they first ran out, he was more with the threes. But when they started doing more team stuff, he was in there on the twos a lot and even a little bit on the ones. You know, the last play we saw, he caught a real nice slant pass and just shot straight up the middle. I'm like, oh, boy. And you got to be sitting there if you're Brian Kelly going, man, how long can I hold off on this? You know, I got to teach some guys some lessons, but yeah, sooner or later, we got to get a guy, you know. So I don't know. And I think that this, let's be honest, this isn't up to Brian Kelly, really. If Kevin Stefferson has a problem or there's an issue, Stefferson's the one who's got to fix it. And, you know, I don't think Brian Kelly's doing Stefferson any favor if there is an issue. Again, and we don't know all the facts or particulars. If there is an issue, you're not doing him any favors by letting him run with the number ones at this point. We don't know what happens when we leave. You know, he could be playing on the first string, and we wouldn't know the first thing about it, to be honest with you. We just wouldn't. So I don't know what the answer to that question is other than I think if it was such a dire situation, he wouldn't be playing at all.
Yeah.
I just don't think that...
I mean, I have a feeling you'll see plenty of Kevin Stefferson this fall.
I hope so.
I mean, they're not going to hold him on the bench regardless of
I think if he's eligible he'll play, but if he's not, if there's still issues, you know, whether it may be a grades issue or whether it may be a conduct issue or you know, skipping class or whatever the case may be, whatever it may be, or if there is a case, I don't know. I just know this. There's no way he'd be on the third string if there wasn't an issue. I don't care what Brian Kelly says. And I think that you know, the media has been smart about it too, because I don't think you can sit and just ask him every week about it. You know, it just is what it is. And he's not going to say anything about it because he really can't. Whatever it is certainly a personal issue. And unless the guy's suspended, he can't really say anything. So it is what it is. We're just going to have to live with it and hope. I think the fact that he's on the team, he is practicing, says that, you know, he's not suspended per se. He's not, kicked out or anything like that. So people probably ought to just let it play out, and then we'll just see what happens. As long as he's here in the summer, you know, as long as he's here in the summer, and let's be honest, once it gets through the summer, we got to find that last day, not just him, but everybody. That last day is always tough because you just never know what's going to happen. It's kind of like last year with Alize Jones. You remember Brian Kelly? I think Brian Kelly thought everybody was clear, but he didn't get the word that Alize Jones wasn't clear, and he's up at something, you know, thinking everything's okay, and he says this, and he doesn't even know until that final day of, you know, when the grades come out. So that's kind of, you know, there's a lot of things that happen this way, and you just don't know. Next question, we've seen some clips of Sean Crawford running and doing some drills, but how has he looked in the bigger sample size of practice that you guys get to see? And, you know, he knows that they've been shutting him down at certain points when his movement's dictated. Is there a time frame to return to contact or doing drills with maximum effort? You know, I think Brian Kelly said it best. You know, Sean Crawford will tell them when he's ready. Not necessarily he's going to walk up there and say physically he's ready, but just based off of what he's doing and what he's able to do and what he isn't. It's something they're just going to ease him into. They know he can cover. They know he understands the defense. They know he can do all these things. Why risk injuring it any more than it already is or was? And let's get him healthy so he can actually compete in the fall when it matters. Sure, reps help and, you know, that type of thing, but we know he can do those things already. I'd just rather make sure that he's healthy, and I'm sure that that's exactly what they're doing. Next question, what do you think about the coaching chemistry of the offensive staff? How does Denson, Alexander, Hestand seem to be doing with a new system, with a new coordinator, with Chip Long, for example? Do you think Hestand welcomes a system that may emphasize the run more? Well, hell yes, I think Harry does. I think he's very excited about it. Jamie, you know, you've been involved in coaching staffs and this type of thing. How important is chemistry?
I think it is really important, which is also important why they brought Alexander along with Long. The fact that they have, you know, a previous relationship coaching together at Arizona State, I think that matters, you know, and it kind of makes it easier for both those guys to kind of fit in. And obviously, you know, Denson and Hestand have already coached together as well. So they already kind of have, you know, a relationship working together as well. And I mean, I don't know how much we can tell from the coaching chemistry just based off seeing them at practice. Like, I mean, it doesn't look like there's any tension between them or there's or like seems like they're getting along fine. But I don't think you really know until usually it's too late.
Yeah.
If things are going bad. But I mean, it seems like everyone's getting along right now. I would say the offense has looked, you know, pretty good for the most part, especially running the ball. So in terms of Denson and Hestand, they have to be happy with how like the offensive line is being used and the plays that are called. And Denson and his back certainly look really good. So, I think it looks like everything's going along pretty well right now. But I think it does matter. They don't have to be; these guys don't have to be best friends, but they have to be able to get along and be able to communicate when things are going bad. And I think some of that you only get that experience from coaching in games. And from you know, Long's probably going to be upstairs and he's going to communicate downstairs, and how they communicate through that during when it's you know, fourth quarter and they have to score, like you're going to kind of find out more and learn more about each other during those kind of periods. So but chemistry is definitely important with it, and which is also on the other side of the ball too, why it's important with Elko bringing Lee along as well, that the fact that they have a relationship and getting along with Elson and Light as well.
I think it's important. I think it's huge. Like last year, I don't think Mike Denbrock and Mike Sanford didn't like each other. I think they like each other fine. I think they get along fine. But when each guy has a different kind of thought on things, and then you have Brian Kelly who has a completely different thought on things, and then you know, one guy may be calling plays at one time and then another guy takes over. There's just a lot of disharmony in there. So I think Brian Kelly, I'm going to take him at his word that he says, hey, the Chip Long's calling the offense. He's doing everything and that's just the way it is. And I think Brian Kelly probably learned from that experience of having what he had last year that, hey, I got to just let somebody do it, you know. And so I'm hoping that's the case. And if that's the case, then I think that there can be harmony on the offensive side. You know, I think Harry Hestand probably has hated the fact that they don't run the football, because I think for offensive linemen to be the physical type of players you want, you got to run the football. You got to let them do physical things and not just be physical at the start of it, or, start of the second half or whatever. You know, you need to be physical from the word go. And it's not just, okay, we're going to start running the ball, and then once we set them up, we'll start throwing the pass. It's, we got to be physical in practice. You can't be a great running team by suddenly deciding, oh, wow, you know, this defensive front isn't very good. Maybe we should try and run the ball this week. If you're going to be a good running football team, you need to run the football in practice all the time. You know, even if you're facing a team that may be able to stop your run, you still need to focus on it, because you're going to still need to be able to get yards. So I think that that's part of it. And last year, I think with Van Gorder, you know, I'm not sure everybody agreed with what was going on, what he wanted to do defensively, and I think that that caused problems. And then on top of that, once things started going bad, I think then the micromanaging starts, and this is my defense, you do things my way, and this is the way we're going to do it, and blah, blah, blah. And I don't think that that's healthy. So I think with Elko being in there, just having all these new, you know, it's just like a clean slate for everybody. And we got to hope that that's going to solve a lot of the issues. You know, if nothing else, just some positive stuff going on. That really is what really can help a tremendous amount. And so, you know, that's why change a lot of times, you know, like I think if you would keep certain coaches, even though they're failing at the time, if you keep them, there's a chance that they can fix it. You know, there's a chance Charlie Weiss could have fixed things. I don't think he would have, or I don't know if he would have, but there's a chance he could. But sometimes you just need change because, you know, somebody, they need to hear something different. They need to think differently. You need to, you know, change their environment to get them to wake up. And so, you know, there's certainly a lot of change on this staff, and let's hope that it's for the better. Next question, relatedly, do you think that Long brought in his entirely new playbook with new terminology and for the offense to learn? Does this affect Wimbush's development at all? And I don't think that he brought a new playbook. What I think he did was he brought some new ideas and concepts and maybe some new terminology. I don't think they scrapped everything and started over, no. But I do think that, you know, he brought some new concepts, some new ideas, maybe called some things differently, you know, as far as terminology goes, than what they were before. And I think Kelly made it the point to say he simplified things, you know, meaning instead of it being, you know, a very long thing, a long call, it's more of a short call that's easier to understand. And I think that that's important. So we have two more questions here. Who was more underrated, Ringo or George? Matt probably doesn't even know who Ringo or George are.
Ringo.
Yeah. All right. So, Ringo, what do you think?
George.
Oh, no, it's Ringo. It's definitely Ringo. Ringo was the swing of the Beatles, man. No question. And last question is, who's a better player, Frank Mason or Jethro? From Gonzaga.
I'm going to say Frank Mason.
I would say Jethro would destroy Frank Mason if they fought.
Well, I think Jethro would destroy Frank Mason, certainly in an ugly contest. We just had to get our Gonzaga in there, didn't we?
Just give me Nigel Williams Frank Mason.
Whatever. So let me ask you a question. Who wins tonight, Matt?
I think North Carolina wins just because...
Always covering his bets here.
They don't have anyone that can guard Josh or Justin Jackson.
Oh, really?
They're so going to have a 6'4" guy and a 6'8" small forward, and that's not ideal.
Okay. So he's who are you picking, Jamie?
I'm picking Gonzaga, actually.
Damn it.
I'm taking the Zags, too.
This is just great.
Well, the good news is Christian's cheering for North Carolina.
Yeah. No, I think Gonzaga can definitely has more than a fair shot. They just got to make sure that they hit their threes, and then it's just that matchup with Jackson's so bad.
Yeah.
But the fact that, what's his face, their North Carolina's point guard's like walking on no ankles right now is a good thing.
Yeah, certainly.
So, but we'll see.
Well, and, you know, to me, I just think that North Carolina's luck has to run out at some point. I mean, it just, you know, I got to give them credit. They have found ways to win the game, and so you have to give them credit for that. But, boy, they've been pretty lucky, especially the last game. It's like, wow. You know, but, hey, sometimes teams are – it's your destiny, you know, and maybe they're riding on that right now.
I can tell you something. That battle between Schmidt Karnowski and Kennedy Mix is going to be a fun one to watch tonight. Oh. That's two big boys that are –
I'm going with Jethro. I'm going with Jethro. All right. Well, folks, that's going to be it for the show. We'll, next Friday, or this Friday, we'll have full practice again, so we'll get a good view of all of that. And so we should have plenty to talk about on Monday. Looking forward to it. And once again, wanted to remind everybody, sign up for irishsportsdaily.com, $19.99 from now, or is it $95, I guess? $19.95 from now until August 1st. Go to the front page and sign on the subscribe section there. You can sign up. Also, if you would share the show, we'd appreciate it. And if you want to advertise, hit me up, MikeFrank18@sbcglobal.net. MikeFrank18@sbcglobal.net. I can give you all the details on cost and listenership and downloads, all that good stuff. That's going to be it, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.